This show was first broadcast on Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. For more information on Fresh FM, as well as links to other great locally produced programs, go to our website, freshfm.net.
Hello and welcome. I'm Galen Pound and you're listening to Top Writers. In a few moments, I'll be talking to international award-winning writer of fantasy and children's books, Wendy Scott. But first, we're going to hear from Dana.
This is Dana Wensley, and you're listening to Top Writers. I'm the Freedom of Speech spokesperson for PEN in New Zealand. PEN is a worldwide organisation that promotes literature and freedom of expression. Today I'm going to talk to you about the censorship by the University of Otago of the magazine The Critic. Freedom of speech came under attack last week when the University of Otago pulled 500 copies of the student magazine The Critic from sites around Dunedin. The latest issue was dedicated to the topic of menstruation and featured a cartoon pixelated image of a woman menstruating on its cover. Campus Watch and the Proctor pulled the magazines and destroyed copies in an act the editor says is censorship and goes against everything a university should stand for. The removal was sparked by an allegation that the cover, designed by a female artist, was offensive and degrading to women. Former editors of The Critic have penned an open letter stating that the magazine has a long history of pushing boundaries, and the university should have addressed its concerns through appropriate channels by contacting the editor or lodging a complaint with the New Zealand Media Council, of which The Critic is a member. This raises two questions. To what extent do we have the right not to be offended by what we see and hear? And what are the limits of freedom of speech in New Zealand? In New Zealand, the Films, Videos and Publications Classifications Act allows for the banning of books and films and video games that are offensive. Certain criteria will always lead to a publication being banned for being offensive. Section 3 of the Act provides that a publication is objectionable if it promotes or supports, or tends to promote or support, the following activities: the sexual exploitation of children, sexual violence or coercion, torture or extreme violence, bestiality, sexual conduct involving the body of a dead person, the use of urine in association with degrading or sexual conduct. The Classification Office must give particular weight to the extent, degree and manner in which the publication deals with the following: torture, serious physical harm and acts of significant cruelty, sexual violence, coercion or conduct in which sexual satisfaction is derived from inflicting or suffering cruelty or pain, conduct, sexual or otherwise, which is degrading, demeaning or dehumanising, sexual conduct involving children or young people, or which exploits the nudity of children or young people, the promotion or encouragement of criminal acts or acts of terrorism, and finally, representations of people who belong to a particular group, culture or community as inherently inferior due to a characteristic which is a prohibited ground for discrimination under Section 21 of the Human Rights Act. Prohibited grounds of discrimination under the Human Rights Act include sex, which includes pregnancy and childbirth, marital status, religious belief, ethical belief, colour, race, ethnic or national origins, disability, age, political opinion, employment status, family status and sexual orientation. Now, while I personally think such limits of freedom of speech can be justified, I note that these limits do not state that a publication can be banned merely because some people find it offensive. The menstruation issue of The Critic is different from that a few years ago, which was banned under the Films, Videos and Publications Act, promoting sexual violence and criminal activity. That article in The Critic was headed "Diary of a Drug Rapist. No means no, but if they can't talk, they can't turn you down." And that was banned because it placed instructional drug rape article beside a positive profile of a man who made his living filming extreme degradation and humiliation of women for sexual arousal. Now, this shows that in New Zealand, while there are limits to free speech in cases where the speech may lead to sexual exploitation, those limits are highly unlikely to extend to prohibiting a publication which deals with menstruation. In my view, the university was wrong to pull copies of the magazine, and if it had concerns, they should have gone through the appropriate channels. This is just one of the issues PEN is monitoring in New Zealand. If you want to find out more about what PEN does and how you can be involved, follow the links on the New Zealand Society of Authors website to PEN, or contact me, Dana Wensley, at pen@nzauthors.org.nz.
I'm Galen Pound, and you're listening to Top Writers. My guest today is international award-winning writer of fantasy and children's stories, Wendy Scott. Welcome to Top Writers, Wendy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you originally come from a science background. How did you get into writing?
Well, when I was a kid, I used to write poems and I used to make my own books and even used to, you know, colour them in with the felt tip pens. And as I got older, when I went into the science background, I sort of left that all behind until later in life. I was living in Adelaide and I saw an ad for a how to write a novel course. And I've always been a big reader. And I thought, oh, I'd like to find out how you put a book together. That sounds really interesting. So I went along, and within the first 20 minutes, I was just like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to try and write a novel. And basically, I found my passion and I just haven't looked back. And that was about probably 13 years ago. And it's just consumed my life since then.
Right. Now, there's two schools of thought about writing courses. What were the benefits for you that you gained from it?
I've done dozens of writing courses. Not only have I gone to workshops, I've also done correspondence courses. And what I gained out of it was actually the knowledge of the structure behind a novel. And having learned the elements of how a novel can be put together, so you're also looking at things like the point of view of how you tell the story, making sure you have motivations and conflicts and looking for logic gaps, having satisfying endings, whole of story arcs. I think that makes you a better writer if you actually understand how a novel gets put together for when you're writing it.
And also for what the reader expects from it.
Oh, absolutely, because each genre, readers have certain things that they expect a story to deliver. And you can write cross-genre stories, but you do have to satisfy your reader. It's how they interpret your story is the most important thing of all.
Now, your first novel was Phariseum. Could you please tell us a little about it? And I hope I got that pronunciation right.
Oh, perfect. Yes, Phariseum. I've always been fascinated by ancient Egypt. I've always collected things. I was actually in a summer creative writing course when out of just nowhere, this idea of a female gladiator came into my mind. So it's sort of a melding of ancient Rome and Egypt, and I sort of was scribbling notes in the column of my notebook instead of actually doing the writing exercise we're supposed to do. And when I got home that night, I just sort of started plotting it out, and it's going to be a trilogy. I have two books out in that series at the moment, and I'm hoping this year I will finish off the third in the Windflowers series. So a lot of it is around the fact that my main character is magic is sort of forbidden to woman in this. It's reminiscent of ancient Egypt, I'll call it. And so she ends up being thrown into the Phariseum when her magic powers start coming out. And no one's ever escaped from this. They're supposed to basically fight to the death. And so she manages to escape, and she wants to make sure that her sister doesn't end up being thrown in the Phariseum as well.
So what is the Phariseum?
Phariseum is like an iron coliseum because iron blocks out and mutes their magic.
Now, you moved back to New Zealand in 2005 with a partner, a five-month-old baby and an ageing Staffordshire Terrier, and you settled in Hokitika, where you lived in a house bus whilst you built an alternative energy house. This is on the west coast of the South Island.
I'm an optimist. Yeah.
With so much going on in your life, how did you manage to get any writing done?
It was actually perfect, the house truck. It had solar panels on it, and I managed to be able to use my laptop. So at night time, when it was all quiet, we didn't have TV or anything like that, no distractions, babies asleep, and I would just plug in the laptop by candlelight and I would type away, and I got so much work. I got more work done then in the house truck than I have ever since then. I think I wrote Golden Scarab within 7 months, start to finish, when I was in the house truck.
Right. And did you ever finish your alternative energy house?
Oh, yes. We've been living in it for many, many years now, and it works well.
Great. Now, your book, Hieroglyph, again, is about your interest in Egypt, and it was published in 2015, and it's won 3 international awards. Now, it's about whether ancient Egyptians ever visited Australia. Was that something you made up, or...?
No. Many years ago, a friend of mine handed me a magazine article about hieroglyphs in Gosford, Australia. And, of course, I was just, like, so fascinated about it, and I just thought, I'm going to write a book about this. So I just started researching the topic, and I thought, it didn't matter to me even if it was a hoax, and we sort of cover that in the book, all the different theories. But I would like to point out that a lot of the ones that debunk it don't sort of bring up the fact that these hieroglyphs were actually there over 100 years ago. And so the guy they say they found scratching ones in, and he must have been the one that did it, doesn't sort of take that into account. They've been there for a very long time. And the fact that ancient Egyptologists have actually been able to decipher them. There's some really interesting, you know, both schools of thought make for fast, and the controversy just begged for had the story written.
Wow, it's really interesting. Now, a couple of things I really loved about the book was first, and I know I'm a child at heart, was flicking it from the back to the front and seeing the whale swim along. And the illustrations, which are not only black and white, but they're also colour. Were they all your ideas, or was that the publisher's?
Oh no, they were all my idea. I wanted hieroglyph to be a work of art, a visual feast, and the whale swimming along and all that was all my idea. And I managed to contact John Hill Nelson, and I thought he lived in Nelson because I emailed him and said, "Oh, would you like to meet, you know, in the Richmond Library for a coffee and talk about illustrating my book?" And he goes, "Well, actually, I live in Auckland." So we just did everything by email, and he was just absolutely brilliant, so professional and so helpful. They really like helping New Zealand authors.
Right, because they really are wonderful, and they do add to the story.
And he's also done the illustrations for my latest release, Tales.
Right, would you like to read something from Tales, please?
I would love to. Now, Zeke's actually a wizard's apprentice, just to give you a little bit of background. Zeke must have dozed. Needle pains jabbed into one side of his neck. Silently he berated his lapse. Had he missed his chance? Without making any sudden movements, he picked up the net by its handle and squinted towards the pool. Pricks of light sparkled above the water like glitter. Bells tinkled when the lights touched the pond. Statue-like, he waited. Where were they? A ripple formed in the middle of the pool. Zeke's fingers tensed around the wooden handle of the net. Bubbles shimmered as something rose from beneath the surface. Water arced up like a fountain when a small fairy burst out of the pond. Rainbow wings whirred as the creature flitted around the forest edges, sniffing and plucking the daisy petals. Once the fairy's arms were full of blooms, her flight sagging under the weight of her burden, she landed on a rock. Zeke waited for his best opportunity. He would only have one shot at this. Contracting his leg muscles, he readied to spring. His target nibbled on the daisies, her eyes scrunched shut, hums of delight purring from her throat. Moments later, the fairy's eyes widened in shock, but it was too late. The drug coursed through her veins. Wings drooped, knees buckled, and the half-chewed remains of a petal fluttered out of slack fingers. Zeke leapt and slammed the net down, scooping up his prize. Arms and legs wriggled sluggishly against the string netting. A grin burst across Zeke's face as he lifted his prisoner, admiring the curve of her wings and her fairy features in the moonlight. He whistled, "A water fairy! I wonder what magic I'll wring out of you." A tiny fist punched through a hole in the mess, smashing into the tip of his nose. "You'll get naught out of me, toad breath."
Great. Now, Tales is one of your more recent books, and it's spelled T-A-I-L-S. And it's book one in the Silver Wishes series. What's the series about and how many books?
The series is three books. It's going to be Tales, Hearts and Paws. And I'm going to paraphrase editor Belinda Mellor. I think she sums up Tales just absolutely perfectly. And she calls it a classic hero's journey, a coming-of-age adventure for Kiowa, a young silver tail on the cusp of maturity, whose hopes for taking his place among his pack's community have been dashed by the loss of his kind's most prized asset, his tail. A silver tail's tail is its connection to its own environment and its fellow pack members. Sadly, the magic it contains is not only prized by the creatures, but by human magicians, whose power is waning, but whose ambition is not. When fate intervenes and Kiowa sets out on a mission to find the deep magic that will protect his pack from the hunters, eager to earn the wizard's bounty, he finds help and friendship in the most unlikely places and danger around every corner.
Now, you and Belinda must be a winning combination because one of Belinda's books and Tales were finalists last year in the Wishing Shelf Book Awards.
Yes, I convinced Belinda to actually enter. She's actually one of my favourite authors. I just love her fantasy series, the Sylvana series.
Yeah, we have interviewed her. If anybody wants to hear the interview, they can go to our podcast. Another series of books that you have written are the Aspiring Writer series, which include Halloween prompts and 13 spooky activities for kids. How important do you think it is that children are allowed to write what they want to write, not what they're told to write? I mean, when I was a child, every year at the beginning of term one, we had to write a story about what we did on our holidays.
They still do that.
I know.
I think it's really important to free your imagination. And that's why the idea around the story prompts was getting kids to not only write, but get them to think and just let their imaginations run wild and do a lot of the what ifs and just see where it took them and getting that spark. And once they start writing, they also start reading.
Which is great. Now, one of the challenges a writer faces after releasing a book, you get published, you've got to sell it. Can you please tell us about the editorial review services that you offer?
Oh, certainly. I think it's very important that you have independent validation of your writing. It's all very well, friends and family might say something's good, but I think independent validation, who actually goes out there and says, this book is good because of, and saying about how well it's written, how the dialogue is, the pace of the story, it can make the difference before someone makes the choice to buy your book and give a chance on an author that they may not know. I also offer another service, which is actually a manuscript assessment service, sort of just looking at, you know, is it at a publishable standard and looking at a snapshot, which is quite good for emerging writers. And then they can sort of fine-tune the bits I pick up on and extrapolate it through the rest of their manuscript. Because so many sort of write a book, it's pretty much in first draft, throw a spell check and a proofreader through it and publish it. And it really isn't at publishing standard. And it's not really acceptable in today's indie market to be doing that.
Right. It's not just emerging writers. When I started writing, a good friend of mine, Ella West, said to me, whatever you do, never, ever get rid of your editor. And I think we see it with big names like Stephen King and Frederick Forsyth come to mind. I mean, Stephen King's latest book that he wrote with his son really could do with a very good edit, but because he's the big name. So do you still have an editor, even though you've been so prolific?
Oh, absolutely. That's part of my writing process. I've got a whole team of people that help me. My books go through not only, it's like a structural edit. I said, usually on the children's stories, I've been working with Belinda Mellor, who's an awesome editor as well as an author. And we seem to work really well together as a team. And then I also have a team of beta readers who go through and they try and point out any logic gaps or anything that throws them out of the story, clumsy sentences. And so it goes through quite a round with them. And then I also have proofreaders at the end. So it does go through quite a few different edits. Sometimes even it might be 20 edits before it actually hits the publish button.
Right. I think everybody should take note of that. You just don't write a story and send it in.
And even then, a typo can slip through. And so I always say to people, let me know and I can and I'll get it fixed, because it's just like, it's unbelievable when you think after all the eyes that have looked on it and yourself, you can't see your own mistakes because you know what it's supposed to say. So you just don't see it. And it's, yeah, it's incredible what you can actually miss.
Now, the song you've chosen today is Nina Simone's song, the very beautiful Wild is the Wind. Why?
I like, when I try to write with, I call it emotional punch. I want readers to really connect on an emotional level with my writing. And this song here is one of those songs that sort of gives you chills. And you can actually hear and feel the yearning in the lyrics of the song, and the background music is just beautiful. So that's why I chose it.
Love me, say you do. Let me fly away with you. For my love is like the wind, and wild as a wind. Give me more than one caress. Satisfy this hungriness. Let the wind blow through your heart. Wild as wind, you touch me. I hear the sound.
Thank you so much, Wendy, for being with us today. Now, your books are available from?
They're all available on Amazon, and some of my children's books, Fairy Dust and Hieroglyph, are available Copy Press in Nelson, and later in the year, Tales will be available from there as well.
And now, people can subscribe to your newsletter. I love getting your newsletter because it's always full of really interesting things. How can they subscribe to that? And it is free.
Yeah, on my main website, which is www.wendyjscott.com, on the contact page, if you just email me through there, I'll add you to my list.
Right, now, if anybody's interested in your editorial review services and manuscript assessments, they can contact you on?
On wendyscottbooks@gmail.com.
Thank you so much, Wendy. I'm Galen Pound, and you've been listening to Top Writers. A podcast of this program and upcoming events can be found on www.topwriters.co.nz.
Thank you.
Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this podcast available by funding the Access Internet Radio Project. Other great programs from Fresh FM are available through iTunes, the Stitcher app, the TuneIn Radio app, and our website, freshfm.net.